My fellow Americans, let's get serious on Horror Movie Night real quick. We're putting this out just before Election Day because it's important that you go out and vote. But be informed, because if you're not informed, you could vote a werewolf into the White House. And that's what this episode's about, as we discuss 1973's documentary, The Werewolf of Washington, as picked by Brian. Brian, what the fuck, man?
Dude, I love this movie, right? And I never saw it. But I just wanted it, and I was very nervous when it came time to watch it, because I was like, fuck, I hope this movie isn't super, like, meta. And it wasn't. Like, it wasn't, like, supposed to be a goof on itself. This movie is a horror movie that is playing in any horror movie you watch, right? Like, this is, like, the movie that's on TV and, like, Halloween, you know? That's fucking great. Yeah. Like, if I had a Halloween party, I would want this movie playing in it. And I don't mean, like, a movie marathon. I wouldn't put someone through this in a movie marathon. But this is a great movie just have on, like, a TV playing while you're just mingling and doing other shit. I loved it, and I will fight everyone for the next hour.
So, interesting fact. This is only in 170 episodes of Horror Movie Night. This is only the fifth film from the 70s that we've ever discussed. Mm. And it just feels very 70s right out the gate.
I know. And Scott, I apologize for picking me on the show because I know you're so sick of 70s fucking horror. You're going to learn to love it again with me because I'm going to pick a lot because I love the 70s.
Thank goodness you only get to pick one out of every three films. But hey, we have a guest today.
Yeah, let's talk about our guest. Sorry. Yeah, we're stomping all over this. We're joined by Chris, who is the director of a movie that Scott and I love. And a lot of you love because you've emailed us to do an episode on it before. And we're like, we can't make fun of this movie. It's perfect. And that's WNUF Halloween special. Chris, thank you so much for joining us on this episode.
Of course, guys. Thank you so much for having me. I'm stoked to talk about Werewolf of Washington. As a huge political junkie and horror film fan, I think there's a lot to love for me in this film.
Nice, second one.
You heard of this because I was like, hey, these are the movies we're talking about in November. Which one are you interested in? And you're like, oh, man, I haven't seen Werewolf in Washington in a while. And like, that was not the answer I expected.
Well, it's funny. Like, I saw it in one of those four movies for like $5 DVDs back when I was in high school. And I got it because I was like, this is going to be garbage. And maybe I could, like, you know, use it for like some sort of like weird subversive film project in school. And when I actually watched it, I was like, this is one of the best, most entertaining TV movies I've ever seen. So
I own this movie on 100 movies for like $12.
Yes.
See, I think my problem, and it all stems from the poster, is I genuinely thought that this movie was going to be like Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, but Mr. Smith just happens to be a werewolf.
Right? You know, it might have been just like this fucking meta, but like, dude, yeah, the whole
then it just turned out to be a very legitimate like Wolfman movie, which was fine, but it caught me off guard.
And I was just in a good, like, a lot of it has to do with where I'm at in life. You know what I mean? Like, if I'm in a bad mood, I may not enjoy a movie, but I cut out of work early. You know, I got home by 2 p.m. I sat in gym shorts, no shirt, just my gut hanging out, having a mashup between Boo Berries and Fruity Pebbles. And it was fucking, I was enjoying, Jade was gone. It was just me and the dogs. Like, it was fucking great Friday afternoon for Brian.
Well, and then you watched another great 70s horror film because you watched Tourist Trap afterwards.
I watched fucking Tourist Trap.
Wait, was it your first watch?
Yes. And it was awesome. And then a weird curveball, I watched the Mary Martin Peter Pan Broadway. And that was a trip down memory lane. But yeah, that was my Friday. And then I went out and socialized, which is crazy. But I did all those things on Friday. Pretty eventful. But this movie was awesome.
So it opens with this speech, which immediately I was like, oh, this isn't the movie I thought it was going to be. Where he's just like, it could happen anywhere. It could happen in America. It happened to me. And I'm like, oh, no. Like, we've got some like Sunset Boulevard intro going on right now where he's probably dead telling us what happened to him. And then it's just like it throws the opening monologue throws all of this exposition because they don't really know how to like slowly establish it. So it's just I was having an affair with the president's daughter. So I got sent to Hungary. Also, there's a werewolf.
Also, my pimp cane.
Hey, Scott, you know what else Dean Stockwell's in?
Oh,
oh
man,
this one's so easy.
Married to the Mob, starring Alec Baldwin, who was also in Beetlejuice.
Wow, really? Yeah. That was like not what I was thinking that you were going to go for. But Chris, just...
yeah, we should give some context. Yeah. Brian does 6 degrees to Beetlejuice every episode of this podcast because he believes he can get to Beetlejuice with every movie we discuss. And so far, he hasn't missed one.
I think that's pretty impressive.
I'm pretty positive that next week is going to stump the poor bastard, and it's totally his own brother's fault.
Yes.
But yeah, that I actually think that he's been on a roll doing great. But then Matt had to pick the most obscure shit. And that movie exists out of space and time.
I think so, it was Rock and Roll Nightmare that I got it because of an extra. Like, there was one of them that was so tough. I had to go really far down IMDb to find anyone.
All right. So let's talk about the attack scene because, I mean, I'm not sure how – I know Brian watched his DVD. I'm assuming Chris probably still had his DVD, but Scott and I had to rely on the YouTube version of this, which was not the best quality, and it just kind of looked like he was playing with a dog.
Hold on, let me tell you something. My DVD, that shit looked like a VHS rip. Like, yeah, it wasn't fucking restored in any way. Screen Factory didn't put out fucking Werewolf of Washington.
But they should.
TV.
Don't get any ideas, all right?
According to the wiki page, the distributor for Werewolf in Washington currently says Shout Factory, so they may have either recently acquired it or put out like a copy of it years ago.
Hey, Matt, just
forgotten.
I just want to explain something. It's Werewolf of Washington.
Whatever. Werewolf in Washington, Werewolf of Washington.
No, that's the Asylum version.
What's really funny is I have two notes for this movie. I used my pen twice.
And was one of them to write down the Beetlejuice lineup?
Yeah. So three. I'm sorry. I don't count this as notes. So three notes. But you know what? That scene when he got bit by the werewolf, it's very similar to Wolfman. And then it didn't hit me until I was watching this that it really bothers me now that American Werewolf in Paris, they added that whole thing where it's like if you kill the werewolf that bit you, you're no longer a werewolf because it would ruin the entire plot to fucking Wolfman. Because he killed the werewolf that bit him as soon as he got bitten. Really got under my skin.
Yeah, I don't know why that would bother. Like, American Werewolf in Paris is a flawless film. Like, we
actually, I'm more upset with Universal. How dare they make the Wolfman and not a he to American Werewolf in Paris' standards? That's my question.
Benicio del Toro, you are on my shit list.
But yeah, so like from what I can tell, there's a lot of I'm not a very politically minded person. I didn't pay a lot of attention in history. So I feel like there's a lot of jokes about the Nixon administration that are just going over my head for like throughout this movie. But he's just suspicious of everybody after he murders a man and is basically getting away with it. And he's like, what are you, Russians? Like, what is happening? Who's paying you?
Some things never change.
Yeah. Well, okay, so Chris, we've been just steamrolling. Well, Brian has been just steamrolling the shit out of you. So,
yeah, I'm sorry.
Whatever, dude. It's all good.
Yeah, like, don't be nice.
I'd appreciate it if we all sat here in silence.
So Chris, I don't know if you were being serious about being a political junkie, but, So Brian and Matt are straight edge. I am not. But my drug of choice is actually the R Politics subreddit on Reddit.
Okay.
So if you want to take a deep dive into the political motivations behind the Werewolf of Washington, you're absolutely welcome to do so.
Well, I mean, it's funny to me, like, I don't really look at this movie as if, like, obviously, if I'm talking about politics, I'd watch documentaries, right? I think this is more of like a satire, but like my favorite moments, like, yeah. I feel like when he, when he's like, they talk about the pentagram, he's like, I knew the Pentagon had something to do with this.
I had that line written down. That line got a chuckle out of me. Dude,
like, I seriously, I wouldn't be surprised if that's how the idea for this film started. like somebody, seriously. And it's crazy to me because, the two things that I wanted to talk about, and it's hard to talk about politics about this because the only thing that really resonates, I think, looking back, is the stuff where the protester subplot in the movie, I think, is very interesting because I think that is pretty indicative of the Nixon administration at that time. But the president, I don't know if it is especially Nixonian. You know, the guy who's the presidential character. I mean, a little bit, but not too much. You know,
he's not really bombastic. He's just kind of slimy.
Exactly, and he's actually like light years more likable than Nixon ever was. but I was going to say, the one other thing that I was going to say about the movie that sticks out for me is, and I don't want to jump to the ending. Is it okay to talk about spoilers? Okay, all right.
Yeah, jump all over.
The movie is 44 years old.
I don't want to ruin it for anyone. okay. But the thing that always reminds me of the ending, like when the president's doing the press conference and you hear that over the end credits rolling and he's turning into a werewolf, I am convinced Joe Dante saw this movie and ripped it off for The Howling.
Dude, I really do like, and I appreciate Joe Dante for doing that, because the only thing that I wished during that scene was that I was seeing a visual of it. So like,
Joe Dante being
like, all right, let's show it happen is even better. But yeah, I actually, probably the closing credits is, to me, one of the best parts of the movie, in the sense that it is a really cool, unique, very 70s thing. I feel like 70s a lot of the time had these, like, we've got no closing credits music, the credits are just going to roll over like a speech. I feel like I think Johnny Got His Gun ends that way, and a couple other films, and I always enjoy that. I always like the just silence with a speech as the credits roll, and you like kind of get the after credits punch through that.
Totally.
There's a couple questions though that I got from this movie. My favorite actor in the film, and probably my favorite moment in the film, is the random woman who finds the first body in Washington, who's just like walking to her car and then just goes like, but it's like, when they show the body, she should have seen it from like miles away. Like, it's just the body in a shopping cart in the middle of the parking lot.
She's not like, it's not like it's 2018 and she was like playing Candy Crush while she was walking the car or something.
Yeah, they were pretty aware in the 70s. You kind of had to be. They had all those crises going on. It was the fucking right after the Decade of Death. Everyone was on toes in the 70s.
Except for this woman.
Except for her. She was cool day long. So I noticed on IMDb that it was called a blaxploitation film, and I said, I have no idea why. And then it immediately cut to the second death, and I was like, oh, this is why. Because it really tapped into the race on that one, and I fucking loved it.
I don't know if that would classify as a blaxploitation film, though.
Right.
It's indie blaxploitation.
It's a real stretch.
It's kind of a stretch, you know?
I don't know. I do like that I got to see a movie that had the line, it was a werewolf, you racist pig.
Yeah. That should be a meme.
Lock him up.
It's actually funny, while you guys were talking, I was looking up the Wikipedia for the movie and also the Watergate Wikipedia. So they were making this before Nixon resigned. Like, I didn't realize was after like all the Watergate stuff had died down, but this was produced during the height of the investigation, which is kind of insane.
Yeah. Maybe they're in on it. Maybe this fucking movie goes straight to the top.
I knew the Pentagon was behind this.
They were trying to warn us, and we just thought we were watching a wholesome film. They're like, no one is getting the point.
They're like bashing their heads against the wall. They're like, but there's a midget in the basement of the Pentagon.
One of my two notes is, a midget domesticates the werewolf, because I didn't have a punchline for it, but I didn't think it needed one, because a midget domesticates a werewolf.
I didn't understand what that was. I wrote, like, why is there a little person here? Like, it didn't make any sense. I had to question if he was a character earlier on the film that I just forgot about. But
no.
This movie's got a lot of, like, random random shit. There's some good quotes, though. There's the one line the president says, "Stop scratching the palm of your hand. It's not manly."
The greatest line is when they are fighting in the bathroom and the guy in the stall just yells, "Will you two faggots shut up?"
Well, that's the thing, though. This movie keeps bouncing between, like, it's a comedy, but it's like, at times it's a comedy in the way that American Werewolf in London was a comedy. Like, American Werewolf in London had some funny, smart moments, but it was like a very serious horror movie. And then other times it's a comedy like it's Student Bodies. Like, it just kind of,
I'm gonna say that, like, most of the time it's Student Bodies, all right?
Like, that bowling scene just feels so out of place, where it's just him, like, Dean Stockwell from fucking Quantum Leap, doing like a physical bit of trying to get a bowling ball off of his hand, like he's Harpo Marx. Like, it didn't make any sense. It didn't fit in with the rest of the movie to me.
Well, I think they wanted to make a horror movie. So they had it, all right, so he's a werewolf, and they had the deaths, and they realized, like, this sucks. You know, without the death scenes, like, this movie is really gonna drag along. So then they tried to add comedy, because it's like there's no comedy when he's a werewolf aside from the prime minister on the plane, which I know it drug on, but it was a great scene.
My favorite part of that is when the prime minister, like, elbows the werewolf, and the werewolf's like, "Oh, okay, sorry." You know, he's like trying to get out of the fucking plane, and you're like,
My favorite part is the prime minister sounds like he was voiced by Trey Parker. Like, it's like,
dude, it's so offensive for a blaxploitation film, quote unquote. There are so many offensive stereotypes in this movie, like,
all but over the place.
Isn't that what makes it exploitative?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I thought that was the whole point of an exploitation film.
The things I didn't like about this movie, I love the look of the werewolf in, like, the
suit. I have
suit.
That note, too.
Yeah. The werewolf looks baller. Like, he looks really cool in his slick suit. And then it was, like, good werewolf makeup. It wasn't anything incredible, but it was, like, a good, like, early Universal Wolfman throwback look.
Yeah.
And I was okay with it. And I love the telephone booth scene. That's the best.
That's what I wanted to talk about, actually, was that scene. Because so I'm watching this movie like a fucking VHS rip on. It's like it was like they went back in time with YouTube and beamed the TV version into YouTube. It's a very, very poor cut. But so I'm watching that, and I look away for a second, and then I see the werewolf on the top of the phone booth. And I'm like, oh, this is really creative cinematography for this really lackluster movie. And then I'm like, oh, he knocked the phone booth over. So I was like really excited for a minute. And then my hopes and expectations were pretty much smashed.
Look, I'm just saying, between this movie and Monster Squad, you take a werewolf and put it in a telephone booth, and I am a fan.
I love werewolf movies. That's the only saving grace of this. If this was like
a vampire movie, the Vampire of Washington.
Oh, my God. The Vampire of Versailles. That would be boring. Actually, if it's the Vampire of Versailles and it's like a period piece, that I could get into. You know,
I think you're about to say the Frankenstein of Washington, because... I mean, I'm curious how the Frankenstein got to Washington.
Well, we already have the Frankenstein of Washington because the midget is working on him, right?
That's true.
Like, I'm just saying,
that WNUF sequel, Frankenstein Goes to Washington, might be a good fake movie trailer to put in the middle of that movie.
It's funny. We actually had this idea a couple years back for a web series about like a presidential election. It would all be fake TV commercials for monsters running for president. And one of them,
the real thing happened.
Dr. Frankenstein was stitching up the perfect candidate. Like, you know, like he'd be like, oh, he's an Iraq war veteran, but he has the heart of a liberal. You know, it's like, all these like goofy things. And, like, so like we never did that because obviously I don't know, I don't have any time or money, but still. I'm trying to think of now of what the best monster of Washington would be. Like, what could you do with like the mummy of Washington? The Gilman.
Gilman of Washington, because I want to see the creature from the Black Lagoon look exactly like the creature from the Black Lagoon and try to explain to the president that he's the creature from the Black Lagoon. And the president's like, relax, Chuck. He's just got his gill hands grabbing him.
But wait, if where, you know, this is what we can do, though, is if we were to do the Gilman of Washington, it would be that he's in Washington killing people off because they're trying to drain his swamp, right?
Thank you for laughing.
That was not nearly as funny as it deserved.
I wasn't thinking like the creature from the Black Lagoon, because I was thinking like it's a person that is now the creature from the Black Lagoon. So the only way that would work is the Hollywood way, where this guy is he's Secretary of Defense, right? If not, that's what he is in the Creature from the Black Lagoon version. And just everyone is just treating him a certain type of way, and he's just not fucking happy. And it's his birthday, and he's just sitting there, and no one's paying attention to him. And he just goes, I wish I was the creature from the Black Lagoon. And then he blows out his candles. And then at night, the stars come down, and they turn him from the creature from the Black Lagoon. And it's going to say, be careful what you wish for.
And it's played by Tom Hanks.
He can do no wrong, so sure. So Werewolf of Washington, I think I've got through all my notes. Anyone else got anything to throw out there?
I actually, what I wanted to tell you guys about this, I'm not sure if you're hip to it, but a couple of years ago, Wild Eye Releasing released a movie called President Wolfman. Do you guys know about this?
No.
Okay, so I have not seen this, but I remember it coming across, and I thought they had just, like, you know, I rewatched some YouTube trailers for it this morning in preparation for this podcast, and I thought they had just retitled Werewolf of Washington. Instead, I realized they took a lot of scenes from Werewolf of Washington and other public domain movies and made a whole new movie where the main character is the president turning into a werewolf, and they redubbed it.
Well, that's amazing. Wow. The biggest surprise on a technical level is that they redubbed this film somehow when boom mics were not a thing in 1973 when they made it, because the sound quality sucks. I also want to point out that Chris is like the best person to be on the podcast ever, because he actually prepared himself. He's like, oh, so I was like doing research to be on your podcast. We're like, boy, we didn't even,
you know what, none of the three of us have ever done research.
Yeah.
No, Chris. I guess we can't say that anymore, because Brian does his research every week so he can find somebody for that was in
Beetlejuice. But that's why I always get nervous when someone is like on a guest on our show, because I'm like, oh, this guy is like going to come on. He's like, all right, so I have all this information, like actually someone that people would want to listen to. And he's like, I'm so excited. And then we're like, remember the beginning when we saw boobs?
That does happen sometimes.
Oh my God.
let us all remember the time that we had a very, very kind, talented voice actor, and we started the episode with calling each other fuck monkeys.
We were talking the Lawnmower Man, just FYI, Chris.
Yeah, but yeah, what a we don't have a good track record with this. So Chris, thanks, you broke
our course chain. Of course I spent all of 10 minutes.
That's really impressive.
Yeah. I mean, that's more minutes than was spent writing the screenplay for Wolfman of Washington.
They basically like threw a typewriter down a flight of stairs and gave us the plot for this.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. It was all pictures.
No, let's talk about WNUF Halloween, okay?
Yeah, let's talk about that. So what's going on with the GoFundMe? Well, no.
Before we talk about the sequel, let's talk about the original. Let's just absolutely mouth hug Chris.
I will say it's
so good.
The first time I saw that movie, it fucking blew my mind. The just like the way that you were smart with like having the film randomly fast forward or rewind, and the pacing of it. It was really cool. And I always I hope this was intentional, but I always tell people, if I hear them talking about a specific Tales from the Crypt episode called Terror TV, I'm always like, oh, if you like that episode, you got to watch this movie, because it's basically like that idea expanded and like really explored deeper. Was that at all an inspiration for
Dude, it's so funny. I saw that episode when I was a kid, and I think very subconsciously it infiltrated my life again. And I think, but the inspiration for WWF wasn't necessarily, I mean, there's a couple things, right? And I could talk about this ad nauseum, but I'll probably give you like the 3-minute version of it. The, you know, a lot of people always say like, oh, it's, you ripped off Ghostwatch. And I had never even heard of, Ghostwatch till halfway through, not even halfway through, probably a month into the release of the film. Everybody started talking and comparing us to Ghostwatch, but I had never seen it. And to this day, I've only seen half of it.
British?
Yeah. Yeah. Like I watched it last fall for the first time and I couldn't get through it. So clearly it wasn't an influence for me. I actually probably would say the Tales from the Crypt episode is probably more influential, but, the big thing with WWF was, you know, we wanted to make another movie. I've done 8 features now, and I think WNF is like the sixth one.
What other stuff have you done? I didn't even know that you. I'm sorry, I didn't do any research.
Oh, it's all good. So I made, I started making movies when I was in college. I made 2 films while I was in college that are garbage. I'd probably say the first decent movie that I made that I'm proud of is a film called President's Day, which is about a high school student council election where a maniac dressed as Abe Lincoln is killing all the candidates for student council.
Oh my God, that sounds amazing.
So I was gonna say that actually might be a good double feature for this one, but we'll get to that later. but it's,
you'd
it's,
be the first person to have a movie that they made.
But it's funny, like that one is like obviously my love of politics and horror movies, and it's like an 80s slasher love letter. After that, I made a film called Witch's Brew about 2 guys that microbrew beer that this witch.
You
this
did Witch's Brew?
Yeah, the one if you're talking about the one that came out in 2001, I think it came out on DVD in 2012. But yeah, it's about killer beer. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah.
Nice. I
haven't seen yeah, it, and, but I and then we did that. Then we did WNF after that, and after that we made Call Girl of Cthulhu. And then
Did Call Girl of Cthulhu?
Yeah, dude.
Dude, I fucking loved that.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Yeah, that's that is how I met my incredible wife. She is the title role.
Oh my gosh, she did a great job. That movie's kind of gross. Like,
totally.
If you put her through that and she wanted to be with you for the rest of her life, you must be a special person.
Well, I was going to say, man, she actually was, when we were making Call Girl, she initially was like, you know, I asked her, like, do you want to be the monster that you transform into the end? And she's like, if I'm not, I don't know if I'm as excited about the role. So yeah. I knew I had something real special there.
And you're native, right?
I'm Baltimore, but Philly's about 2 hours north. So
okay,
yeah. And then after Call Girl, you know, we spent a little bit of time trying to figure out what we're gonna do because I was editing WNF while we were producing Call Girl. So like we were literally making 2 movies at one time, and I mean WNF is like a fever dream, man. Like we made it. Like I don't think I could have made a movie faster than WNF. It was like from script to screen. It was like I think 7 or 8 months.
That's insane.
It is insane, and then we'll talk about that with the sequel because I'm trying to take my time more, knowing that people are expecting more. But also after that, we made a movie that we're in post production on right now called What Happens Next Will Scare You, and how do I put this? It's basically like a clickbait horror satire. So these folks in like a BuzzFeed style office are voting on their top 13 scariest viral videos for a listicle, and an early entry into the night actually unleashes all the monsters from the viral videos. So like, you know, like some of the footage are like, you know, you have like ghosts captured at little kids' birthday parties. You have a Vatican sanctioned how to perform an exorcism tape. So you have a bunch of crazy found footage stuff that are all the segments of the film.
Oh my God.
I have
God.
Such a big smile on my face hearing the idea.
This is amazing. I cannot wait to see this.
And I'll tell you right now, you'll get really excited because the Burgers, the paranormal couple from WNF, they return in a segment of What Happens Next Will Scare You. So, gosh, where did I leave off? So, okay, so you asked about WNUF, the inspiration. So you know, we hadn't made a movie since Witch's Brew because, honestly, like, you guys know this. As you get older, finding time to do the stuff you love gets harder, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, and that's a constant struggle for every people and every person, especially artists. So we had made Witch's Brew, and Witch's Brew took a long time to make because we had some sound issues. I had ADR about 30% of the movie, and I was debating about moving to LA, and I'm really glad I didn't. But long story short, I was like, the only way we're gonna be able to make another movie this year is probably gonna be if we make a found footage movie. And it's funny, I love really good found footage movies. Like I'm actually buddies with Ed Sanchez, who directed Blair Witch Project. I worked on his film Lovely Molly. And
oh,
I think
nice.
I think Blair Witch is like the perfect example of like how found footage has done well, right? And there's been a couple since then, but a lot of them are garbage because people make them fast and loose thinking they can make a quick buck. So yeah. What ended up happening was I sat down with Jimmy George, my co-writer, my co-producer for those films, and we wrote a list of all the shit we hated about found footage movies. And literally, to do it very quickly, it was like, okay, I hate the fact that it's like usually one location for a long period of time. There's nothing to break up monotony. I hate the fact that the conceit of the story immediately, if you see this, if you go out and buy this video with a UPC code, you know it's not really found footage. And then I couldn't understand why somebody wouldn't put the camera down, right? Why is the conceit of the story they're still filming when fucked up shit is happening? So yeah. I immediately came up with three ideas. One, it was like, okay, why are they filming the story? Okay, well, they're filming the story because if they turn the cameras off, they lose their broadcast, they lose their commercial revenue, therefore they lose their money, they lose their jobs. They have to film, right? So that immediately eliminated that. The second thing was the idea of monotony. Like if I don't want to be in one location the whole film, and I really love ensemble films, so I was like, if it was a film broadcast, you'd have to literally have breaks. And I've seen films where they shoot them 80s style, but they're not legitimate. Like I was like, fuck it, I'm really gonna do this. I'm gonna make half an hour of commercials. Like I thought that was what would make the movie feel believable, right? And which is insane. I mean, honestly, when we started doing this, we were like, there's nobody crazy enough to make this movie, and at least not this way. And that's what we were. We were those crazy nobodies, and it paid off really well. But the third thing too was the conceit of the story. Okay, when we released the movie, there was two things we did. Melissa, my then girlfriend, now wife, we drove around. It was only on VHS for the first couple of months before we even signed a distribution deal. We would go to VHS conventions, horror conventions, thrift stores, public restrooms. We would leave copies of the video.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I've heard Matt told me about that.
Yeah, we'd leave copies of the video in these places with just a white spine label that read WNUF Halloween Special. And then I also put it on Cinemageddon, like encouraging people to torrent it. I made a fake bullshit bio that said, oh, my aunt taped this on TV for me back in the late 80s. and the whole point was give this secret out for free, but keep it a secret. Don't go crazy and promote it like a maniac. And for the first, I think, 3 months of the release, it wasn't on it was only available on VHS to buy, because I knew if people were that excited about sort of uncovering this, it would get people talking about it.
And it worked. Like I think you did a solid job with what you created. Like, it just feels so authentic and it's so fun. And the fact that you're doing a sequel is so exciting, because I think what's cool about it is that it doesn't have to tie in to anything from the previous movie. It can be a completely different thing, different reporters, different commercials, different storyline. It's just that you use the same framework, right? I'm hoping.
Yeah. Well,
right?
I'm keeping it. I'm keeping the particulars of this a little close to my chest, not because it's funny. Some people might be like, "Oh, you don't even know what you're doing yet." Like, no, I know what I'm doing. I've had the plot in my head for the last 3 years. but it's one of those things where I want to make sure. One, I haven't asked everybody that I want to have come back to come back yet. So if any actors that are in the original, you know, if I haven't hit you up yet, don't worry, I'll be in touch. I just got to figure out what price point I'm operating at based off the money we raise. Because honestly, I'll tell you right now, guys, and this is not a thing I should advertise publicly, but, you know, I'll make this movie on tin cans if I have to, because I want to make it. I've been trying to raise 50 because I think I can make a grander movie and make crazier stuff in regard to, I mean, the 1990s are more sophisticated media wise.
Yeah.
So like I have to have some budget, like I want to have some animated commercials, like I want to do some cool stuff. So we'll see.
Now you got me really excited.
Yeah. But I'll tell you this.
Just for the commercials. I love commercials in horror movies. Like, the reason that I loved Mandy was strictly because of Cheddar Goblin.
Cheddar Goblin! Right.
Totally. Well, and so I'll tell you the three things, and these are already in the GoFundMe campaign video. But it's important to note. I mean, like, okay, the fact is it takes place in the 1990s. So like, you know, there's characters that die in the original that you're like, well, how can you bring them back? Well, I figured out ways to bring back quite a number of the folks that are no longer with us based off the the original. But that feels appropriate, right? Like, I don't – this is not like – and I want to clarify this because I think it's important. The movie's not a cash grab. Like, I don't have to make this. Like, I walked away from a pretty significant deal last October last December because it wasn't how I wanted to make the movie at that point. And it's one of those things where, like, I do this because this story is burning inside me. And, you know, we'll see what happens. But anyway, going back to the idea. So it takes place in the 1990s. There's going to be returning characters and it's going to feel right. Like, if you liked the original, you're going to like this. But I think the most important and secret is, you know, it is indicative of two things. One, this is about building the universe. It's not necessarily about building the exact story of the original, right? Like it is somewhat more of a spiritual sequel, understanding that media changed in the 1990s, our culture changed in the 1990s. And if you think about the 1990s, if you watch commercials from them, the 1990s, like, advertising people think they are so much wittier and smarter than anyone else. Like, it is like, but they're not. And that's, and I love that. Like, I think I've already pulled some stuff. Like, I mean, I've been pulling stock footage and I've been pulling resources for the commercials for the last year and a half. And I'm so stoked to get working on this.
So, and I apologize if this is information that's all in the video, because we're going to be blowing up our group, all of our social with the link. The link is already on our group as of this recording, but we're going to keep pushing it when this comes out. But I have yet to watch the video. I just knew that it was happening when Matt was like, "Hey, this is happening." I was like, "Oh God, yes." But do you have a roadmap are you trying to have this released by, I don't know, October 2019?
Sure. So it won't be happening by next October. I think it's probably realistically 2 years away. The reason why I mentioned that is because, and one of the reasons why we're doing the GoFundMe is because the price point, like, for $250, I think your name, your voice, or your photo could be in the movie. And I think for $500, you can be on screen saying a line of dialogue. So I need to know who needs to be in the movie still, you know?
Yeah,
like, okay. So the campaign in that regard is going to go through at least December, possibly through the end of the year. So, you know, if people get Christmas money, or if you want to give someone a Christmas gift in your life to be in the movie, it's a pretty cool Christmas gift. That being said, I think we're probably not going to shoot the lion's share of the movie until probably late spring, summer of next year. Just because, you know, I might find somebody that donates that I'm like, man, you know, I might give them a starring role in the commercial, or I might realize they're a great actor and they might just have a supporting role, depending, you know? Yeah. So it's not really possible, but I think it's probably going to premiere sometime in 2020. Like, that probably makes the most sense to me. We're actually already talking to, it hasn't been discussed thoroughly yet, but we're actually been talking to a film festival about partnering with them. We're possibly giving them the premiere of this film. I mean, before the movie's done. Right. So, but they're great dudes. So we'll see. But yeah, I mean, like, I think 2020 is probably the most realistic deadline.
So nice. Obviously you're keeping along the same lines as the original, but are you going to give it like the same attempt for everything, like to make it like this, people find it, people think that it's potentially real, or is it like the cat's out of the bag? It's going to be in the same style. It's going to be stylistically the same, but it's going to be marketed, you know?
So I think, and this is one of the really important points, if you look through the donation incentives on the Indiegogo, or I keep saying Indiegogo, it's on GoFundMe. We can talk about why I'm going to GoFundMe after that. The reason why you're going to get VHS. So this is how it's working. The VHS tapes will be mailed first. Like, the people that back it at the VHS level will get it before anyone else. Then people who buy the DVDs, and then 6 months later will be streaming and downloads. And the reason why that is because we want to do it like the original. Like, when you get the VHS tape, you're going to get a VHS tape that that has a white spine label, or at least a clamshell case or something that says, like you're going to be like, what the fuck is this tape in the mail, right? So
yeah.
It's pretty incredible. You're going to pop in a tape. You're not going to have seen a trailer before. It's going to be like, let me tell you a story real quick. And this is probably my favorite story about surrounding WNUF. So, a guy told me the story where he his friend was like, yeah, you know, it was like the first week of October or whatever. And my buddy Jimmy, like, he says, dude, I found this tape in the basement. This, I watched a couple of minutes. We got to watch this as a group. This is insane. I can't believe this was in the basement of our house we moved into. And the guy puts in WNF Halloween Special, and his roommates are like losing their mind because they're like, what, this is absurd. Like, what is this? And the story turns quickly funny because one of them actually was from Baltimore and eventually recognized someone. but that's what I'm trying to create. Like, I mean, I think one of my favorite earliest reviews of the original was somebody said, WNUF is less of a movie as it is an experience. And I love when people tell me, like, yeah, I had to dust off my VCR to even watch this. Like, that is, like, you know, this is not as simple as eating and I think this is a good thing, to be honest. It's not as simple as, like, you know, microwaving Hot Pockets and flipping on Netflix. I mean, at some point I'm sure we'll be on a streaming service, but it's, you have to want to see this movie. And I think that commitment to this movie and this universe is what gets people excited, you know?
Yeah.
I love that concept. I really love the concept of the WNUF universe being something that is not, that is niche and is something to be shared. You know, it is an experience to find it and then to live through a viewing, preferably with other people, because it is really nostalgic. I know that it's supposed to, is it 89 that it's supposed to have happened? It
takes place in 87.
Okay. Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
But it feels like 92 to me. I don't know why. I mean, like, I'm 36, mm-hmm. and so uh-huh. it feels like when I was, you know, right preteen kind of mm-hmm. years. And so that's kind of why it feels like the cusp of the 90s for me. But
yeah.
Matt had mentioned it to me in the past, and finally, I believe Shudder had it streaming last October. Mm-hmm. Does that sound right?
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, I think Shudder got it like sometime last year, maybe a year and a half ago. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But that was how I finally got to watch it, was streaming. And part of me wishes that I had seen it on a tape, you know, mm-hmm. like had that part of the experience. But I think it's a testament to what WNUF really is that even sitting and watching it on my computer screen still felt like that experience that you were going for with the actual physical media.
Totally.
And I just love that about it, because all of the work that was done in post to make it look like a tape is so good. And it's
Thank
so
you.
Spot on. But WNUF, I feel like it's a little bit more subdued. And it's like less in your face. And once you get into a couple of the commercials, because you don't even get to the story until, what is it, like 10, 15 minutes in.
Exactly.
I mean, there's a lot of commercials at the beginning, and it's awesome. What I'm getting at is like the treatment, the film treatment, and mm-hmm. the pacing and everything, really beyond the physical media of WNUF, mm-hmm. it's still that nostalgic experience if you mm-hmm. are in the right age group. I don't know if like a 20-year-old would get it as much as myself.
Well, and it's funny you bring that up, because our crappiest reviews or most mean-spirited or negative reviews are always people that are a lot younger, and they just don't – I mean, people complain about the commercials. And don't get me wrong, you know, I understand the commercials are annoying. It makes it less of a feature film, but I don't really know if I was trying to make a traditional feature, you know, but I was going to say kids don't get that. I mean, I think they're probably angry I don't have a skip ad button on the screen. No.
But see, I feel like that's
for WNUF part five when you're in the 2000s.
Yeah. Dude, no, I mean, I
leave in fucking flash drive. You know,
if I am so fortunate, I would like to make a found footage movie about every day. Decade. Like, I already know what I would do for the early 2000s, but you know, if I should be so fortunate.
That's funny, because about 10 minutes ago in this conversation, I was like, I wonder if you would ever do like one for every decade.
All right, well, so what's the GoFundMe link, and then we'll wrap up.
Sure. So the GoFundMe link is GoFundMe.com/WNUF-Halloween-sequel. And seriously, guys, I'm on Twitter, Twitter.com/ChrisLaMartina. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I think my Instagram is Chris.LaMartina. You know, obviously, if you're a horror person and I can just sort of tell generally from your profile, I'll add you, even if we only have a couple of mutual friends. So yeah, seriously. And there's ways to communicate with me. Just let me know.
Hey, Toxic here.
And Meridon, too.
We're the hosts of the Overleague podcast.
Are you a fan of Overwatch League or just a fan of Overwatch in general?
Well, if you are, we break down matches and all other Overwatch happenings, and we won't judge your main.
Tune in every other Tuesday to the Overleague on Geekscape, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so everybody, what's your double feature for Werewolf of Washington?
Well, I'll go first because I wouldn't actually put anybody through this, but one of the suggested films on the sidebar in YouTube for me watching The Werewolf of Washington was My Mom's a Werewolf.
And yes,
that's on my list too. That's on my list too, Scott. So get prepared.
Please don't. Oh man, I made about it. Like it's got the dad from fucking Nightmare on Elm Street in it, and the mom is actually she was in like Airplane or something. I can't remember, but it's not very good. I watched about 2/3 of the thing. Please don't make me watch the first 2/3 again, Brian, please. But yeah, if you really want some, like, two mediocre werewolf comedies, you back-to-back it with, like, Werewolf of Washington, My Mom is a Werewolf.
Okay, so for mine, I felt like I wanted to stick with the 70s. I wanted to have that still 70s vibe. And I wanted something that was maybe a little bit goofier than this movie, but still maintained a lot of the controversy and and when I say controversy, I mean like the suspicion of the main characters about things. So I'm going with Attack of the Killer Tomatoes as my double feature.
Ooh,
with
nice choice. Nice. So I also am going to keep it in the fucking 70s.
You don't do what I think you're going
to
do.
I'm going to do it. I have to, because it's pretty much my tattoo of the show. So pretty much if I was going to show this movie, it would be something where it's just something in the background. And I'm going to be like, you know what? It's Werewolf Wednesday. Let's get some tacos and we're going to watch werewolf movies. And I'm going to put on Werewolf of Washington. And then I'm going to say, we're going to watch Werewolves on Wheels.
Yes!
I'm going to say, sit tight. Just to ease everyone, because Chris, I'm going to give you a spoiler alert. I know everyone's excited, but you're going to have to wait an hour and a half to see the Werewolves on Wheels. But you will see a lot of satanic rituals and really, really bonkers 70s shit. And that's my double feature.
All right, Chris, take us home with your double feature.
All right, so first of all, I got to say big ups to My Mom's a Werewolf, because my wife hosts horror movies at a bar here in town, and that's something she showed in September, so I love that movie.
Nice, nice.
But I'm going to go with, if you guys have ever seen Masters of Horror, the episode Homecoming. So basically all these dead soldiers come back to vote in the next election, and it's a political satire from Joe Dante, and I would do that as my double feature.
Oh, awesome. Man, that's a nice choice, because I thought that you were going to go political with Dead of Night.
Oh, but, man. Yeah.
God, I love it.
I didn't know if you were just going to fucking market your movie.
Well, I was going to say my
all was president.
my all best presidential horror I've ever seen.
my alt was going to be, what was that, FDR American Badass, the one where it's like yeah.
Hey, but cool. So real
Uncle
quick,
Sam,
I have to do
Ripper. There's plenty of good political.
A couple for you, yeah. So before we sign off on this amazing episode of Horror Movie Night, I want to do a real quick WNUF double feature. All right. And I've been thinking about this all week. I would love to do, I would start with I would start with the other one and end with WNUF. But Chris, mm-hmm. have you ever seen Lake Nowhere?
I have not, but I've heard of it so far, but I haven't checked it out yet.
It's like, it's very similar. I don't think it's as competently like post-work. The post-work isn't quite as competent as WNUF. Like, it's okay. Not as immersive, but it's still cool. It's still the same kind of, you know, like found VHS tape kind of thing. And it's supposed to be from the 70s. So you got late 70s, Lake Nowhere. Bump it into the late 80s with WNUF Halloween Special. That's a good double feature.
Oh, that's cool. I dig it. Yeah.
And my Halloween this year, my Halloween night double feature, because I was doing the 31 double features of Halloween, was Trick or Treat and WNUF Halloween nice special. So it's a perfect anthology double feature right there for Halloween night.
Hell yeah.
All right, guys.
Wait, I don't get my WNUF feature.
Fine. Whatever, Ryan.
It's because I haven't seen it. Chris, I will watch it. And the reason that I haven't, and I've been hesitant, but hearing about it, it seems like one of the few that I would enjoy. I just feel like my generation,
he's a little younger,
tapes are like the slashers, where and I know that they do it to all horrors, but slashers got it the worst in the 70s and 80s. And I feel like found footage films got it really bad in like the early 2000s, where it's just like 90% of them are just so shittily done and no one really cared. And they were just trying to cash in on the found footage that they left a bad taste in my mouth. But based on this, it sounds great. And then the one other found footage film that was different that Matthew actually showed me, the Poughkeepsie Tapes. That would be my double feature because it's not the same old shit. And I love the idea of it. I mean, I think if you were alive for Blair Witch, you understand like fucking how huge that was when the first one came out. And I think that no one tried to do anything different. So I appreciate you for doing something different. And I appreciate the Poughkeepsie Tapes for doing it a little differently, which could really be debated as a found footage, but I call it a found footage.
Right on. That's cool. Yeah. And I was going to say, if you want to watch it, WNUF is streaming on Amazon Prime right now.
Oh, yeah, nice. I live off. I don't have cable. I only have Amazon Prime. So
right on.
I'll watch it today.
It's cool.
Watch it now while I'm here.
All right, everybody. That was Washington of Wolf Street. That was Werewolf of Washington, as picked by Brian. We're done Shocktober, Rocktober, Rock and Roll Nightmare October, and we are finally back to our normal game plan of just whatever movies come to our crazy little minds to sit and make each other watch. And next week, as Scott has given a slight hint to, is frankly, it's sickening that someone would pick a movie like this. But only a fucked up mind like my own would decide to subject my brother and one of my best friends to something like this. And I'm okay with it. So tune in next week. See what terrible, unheard of slasher film I dug up and was like, yo, let's watch this. And we will be back. We will be back next week. In the meantime, just hit up you're throwing me all off with all these call numbers. Hit up hmnpodcast.com for all of the previous episodes, bonus episodes, all that good stuff. You know, we had a shit ton of bonus episodes at the end of October, and I'm sure that there'll be some sprinkled around throughout November. Thank you, everybody, and go donate to the GoFundMe fund for the sequel to WNUF Halloween Special.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.